From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Maggie Wall. Following the end of halibut season, Homer takes the top spot for halibut landings, and Seward leads the pack for sablefish. Ballot Measure 1 was defeated by Alaska voters. We talk with Pebble Limited Partnership's CEO. Expo has a new date, Thanksgiving week in Seattle. And finally, in Sitka, a new model for research which calls for including the human factor with the hard data. All that coming up on this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report, right after this.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard-accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org.
Fishing for halibut and sablefish closed on November 7th. For halibut, 95% of the nearly 20 million pound catch limit was taken. For sablefish, 79% of the 26 million pound quota was taken. Homer regains its title as Alaska's top port for halibut landings, followed closely by Seward and Kodiak. For sablefish, Seward led all ports for landings, followed by Sitka and Kodiak. The industry will get its first look at potential halibut catches for next year at the International Pacific Halibut Commission meeting, which is set for November 27th through 28th in Seattle. Those halibut meetings will be available for live streaming. Likewise, the State Board of Fisheries meets in Dillingham from November 28th through December 3rd to take up 47 proposals for commercial, sports, and subsistence fisheries issues. You can also listen to those meetings live streaming as well.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans, on the web at alaskaseafood.org.
By a significant margin, Alaska voters defeated Ballot Measure 1, commonly known as the Stand for Salmon Initiative. The controversial measure was aimed at increasing protections for Alaska's most iconic fish. It would have significantly toughened the environmental permitting process for developments in salmon habitat. The outcome was immediately celebrated by a key figure pressing ahead on another controversial issue, the CEO of Pebble Limited Partnership. Elizabeth Harbaugh of Alaska's Energy Desk has more.
Pebble Limited Partnership CEO Tom Collier says even though his mine proposal wasn't always at the forefront of the debate, the Salmon Habitat Initiative was in some ways all about Pebble.
It was clear that this initiative was aimed at trying to stop Pebble and stop any other major significant resources development project in Alaska.
Pebble's push to develop a copper mine in the Bristol Bay region faces fierce resistance from groups who say it endangers the salmon fishery there. Many of those same groups supported Ballot Measure 1. But Pebble kept a relatively low profile leading up to this election. Although it contributed money to the campaign against the initiative, it didn't play a huge role in the opposition's messaging. Collier says with the initiative's defeat, he's more confident about Pebble's prospects.
You know, we think that responsible development can now go ahead in the state with the rigorous permitting requirements that the state already has in place. And we're eager to be part of that as we move forward.
During the campaign, Ballot Measure 1 supporters were reined in from outright saying it would block Pebble. And there's a legal reason for that. The state of Alaska challenged the initiative in court, saying it went against the state constitution for a ballot measure to prioritize land for one use, here salmon, over other uses, like a mine. The Supreme Court thought some parts of the initiative did just that, and in August removed those parts, allowing the rest to go on the ballot. United Tribes of Bristol Bay Executive Director and anti-Pebble advocate Alana Hurley says she does not think the initiative would have halted the mine, but she believes it still would have helped opponents' cause by putting in place stricter standards. She points out that the Bristol Bay region did vote largely in favor of the ballot initiative.
While those ideals didn't prevail at the statewide level, it's still a really clear indication about our region's priorities and what we value.
The Pebble Limited Partnership wasn't the only mining company happy with the election's outcome. Donlin Gold spokesman Kurt Parkin, whose company is trying to develop a large gold mine in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta, said it would have delayed the project's quest to get its major state permits by early next year. Parkin says at a mining conference in Anchorage the next day, many were breathing a sigh of relief.
I think people were surprised at how big the margin was to win by over 63-64%. Was huge, and so people were pretty pleased with that.
Parkin says ballot measure one opponents could be willing to come to the table and negotiate updates to the state's salmon habitat protections. But he said it would have to be through the legislative process rather than by ballot initiative. The initiative sponsors have also said they're going to continue pursuing ways to update the state's laws protecting salmon habitat. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, 1-800-992-4960, or online at alaskaboat.com.
Fish Expo, one of the industry's oldest and most popular trade shows, has changed its date. Lainey Welch tells us it had to do with football, and fishermen don't seem to mind.
A few months ago, organizers were scrambling when the traditional dates were spiked this year by a football game at Seattle's CenturyLink Center, where the annual event is held. That pushed Expo into Thanksgiving week amid worries that it would cut into participation.
Overwhelmingly, most people are saying that the shift is not that dramatic and that the show is just too important and that they're going to be there.
Danielle Christensen is Expo director. The date change isn't working for some exhibitors, she said, but early visitor registrations are already ahead of last year.
Especially those coming from away, they're sort of already traveling around that Thanksgiving time, so this is actually a good schedule for them. No downtime. You can go right from Expo to your family and your turkey dinner.
Dominating the show floor again is an even bigger Alaska Hall, which will house 52 Alaska companies and the main stage for educational sessions.
Over one third of the folks that came last year said they were specifically looking for products from Alaska.
A new focus this year, Christensen says, is a young fisherman's track. Expo organizers realized that group was overlooked, she said. The National Fisherman Booth will feature information and mentors for those just starting out.
We know that they need some assistance, and we're hoping to be a bigger part of that for them.
Also in the Expo lineup, a public hearing on the Pebble Mine.
Pebble Mine is something that comes up every year for us, and we think it's a really important topic to have in our education program.
Pacific Marine Expo is set for November 18th through 20th in Seattle.
That was Fish Radio's Lainey Welch. Everyone who fishes likely has had personal experience that doesn't exactly square with the projections of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. In fact, fisheries management in Alaska is almost entirely a numbers game in which ordinary people's observations, expectations, and knowledge play no role at all. That could change, though. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and the University of Alaska are involved in a study that they hope leads to the integration of human experience into the fisheries management. As KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports, online research in Sitka could create a model statewide for what scientists call integrated ecosystem assessment.
Last year, in a story produced by National Public Radio's Melissa Block for her series Our Land, Sitka troller Charlie Wilbur was asked if climate change was affecting his ability to harvest king salmon. Here's how Wilbur responded.
It's really hard to pin it down to say this is climate change, but things are definitely changing.
Wilbur, like almost all of us, isn't qualified to speak on climate science, but nearly four decades on the water have made him, and Alaskans like him, a top expert in his own environment. NOAA Fisheries now wants to capture and quantify that expertise, says social scientist Marisha Shimkoviak.
Fishermen have a real vast understanding of their local marine ecosystems and their fisheries because they're highly dependent on them. and they are out there every day, and they know these things. To a degree that, you know, it's really hard for us to understand and capture to the same degree.
But you don't have to be a career fisherman to connect with the ecosystem. When a fishery has a poor season, everyone feels it in different ways.
Community members more broadly understand how changes in their local ecosystem and their fisheries can really reverberate throughout the community. So they'll know the layers of the connections of the community to fisheries, where there might be buffers against changes in the ecosystem and what may break those kinds of buffers.
NOAA, or the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, is the scientific agency that supports the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council. The council oversees fishing in the Gulf of Alaska beyond the state limit for species like black cod and halibut, both of which are of major importance to Sitka. Shimkoviak says the council is pressing NOAA to provide indicators of community well-being that reach beyond direct economic indicators, or the kinds of harvest and market data traditionally used to manage fisheries. And so the Integrated Ecosystem Assessment Model was designed, and Sitka was chosen as the site.
Sitka is one of the most important fishing-related communities in Alaska, and it's a unique community in terms of its fishing fleet, in terms of its people, in terms of the economic and environmental vulnerabilities that currently have.
Judith Rossellon is a NOAA biologist who is teaming up with the social scientist Shimkoviak to develop the Integrated Assessment Model. They both visited Sitka in April to define the links between community well-being and the fisheries. They're coming back this month to figure out how to measure them. The goal is to introduce human metrics into the data-rich science of fisheries management.
It's not going to change the way that we manage the fisheries tomorrow, but it's definitely going to add pieces of knowledge to the current management process. And with that knowledge, then we can start doing a better and more informed fisheries management.
And that means managers might begin to understand the data that Alaska's subsistence, sport, and commercial fishermen, like Charlie Wilbur, have been collecting every time they leave the dock.
The water temperatures are warmer. We've seen species of fish that don't ordinarily get up this far.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Turtles, we've seen some pomfret.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, supporting conservation and harvesting of Alaska's wild, sustainable fisheries.
That's it for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from Elizabeth Harbaugh with Alaska's Energy Desk, Robert Woolsey at KCAW in Sitka, and from Lainey Welch at Alaska Fish Radio. This last program before Thanksgiving, I am thankful for all of you, from reporters to listeners to radio stations that make this show possible. I'm also thankful to KMXT for giving me the fun job of reporting on fish. And finally, I'm thankful for all the fishermen that make living in a fishing town so special. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Maggie Wall.